Hello, everyone. Welcome to the official Outlander podcast. I'm Matt Roberts, writer and executive producer on the show. Welcome back to Singapore, episode 705. Obviously, there was a little bit of chatter when we released the titles. And I found that this one was the one that was most talked about in that, you know, what could that possibly be? But as you watch the episode, I think we kind of reveal where this little nugget came from. We try to, when we title these things, we try to find a title that tells you a little bit, makes you interested in what could that possibly be, and also that doesn't give away too much in the sense that you know exactly what's going to happen. Oddly enough, this title card was one that Toni Graffia, who she was so excited about it, you know, the goats. Because there's a line in the episode about where a goat can go, and so we in post, so the title cards are done in post. So once we have the episode, we look to see what would fit and for the title card and what helps to tell the story or start the story. And a lot of times we have to go to Scotch, it's called stock footage, that we don't actually film that. So we didn't film the goats on that ridge. That was stock footage. Somebody randomly filmed goats on a ridge. Little story about this particular moment. So when this was originally written and filmed, where Brianna actually goes into the graveyard here, and the scene played out in the script when she goes all the way through. She goes and sets a rock on the cairn, and I watched the episode when it came in, you know, when it was all finished and cut and the director's cut came in. I watched it. And it was a great moment. It really was. And Sophie played, you know, played it so well, and it was heartbreaking. And then we get to this moment in the show where she's broken down and she's really upset. And it just struck me that if she didn't go in, if she didn't go in the graveyard, and she couldn't bring herself, because if she was so afraid to find that her father or her mother were there. So we rejiggered it and we reshot the ending of this episode. And I'll talk more about it when we get there, but we reshot it to break the scene up, to bookend the story. And in the end, I think it really works. You know, you try things. One of the things about making movies and TV is you try things. Some things really work in your head. They work in the book, because in the book, all of you who read the books, you get to fill in all the gaps. You get to be the casting director. You get to be the set designer and the set decorator and the camera person. And the director. So when you want to cut to something else, you can. You can pick a book up. You can read it in a different spot. You can do a lot of different things. And we have some luxuries in that, meaning we can see a cut and go, okay, this doesn't work the way it was scripted and or filmed. So we have to readjust this, recut it, and sometimes refilm. So that was an incident where they had filmed it. And then months later, we went back and film the last part of that. So we had to match everything. She had to wear the same clothes. She had to have the same. So it was, those are the continuity issues. What I love about this moment is when we, you know, we have to go out and find a Ticonderoga, which, you know, everybody knows we film in Scotland. And, you know, Scotland does a fantastic job making herself into all kinds of different places. But this fort right here actually exists. The wooden structures actually exist. We added on and built within the fort. But visual effects added all the stone structures of what you see in Ticonderoga. And seamlessly, I might add, we know that when we were doing the visual effects previews, that a lot of people who had seen it for the first time were like, oh, I didn't even know that was there. And that's what you want to hear, because it's not there. But sometimes we just really luck out, and we lucked out with Ticonderoga, because to build that entire fort would have been difficult for production. And so those are the stone structures I'm talking about. If you're with me on the same, is those little stars that are popping out. That was all visual effects. We luck out in the sense that this fort was there, 20, 30 minutes away from our studio, which is even better. And we were able to enhance it with visual effects and create Ticonderoga, our version of Ticonderoga. Obviously, historians and people who've been there multiple times and or, you know, experts on Ticonderoga will go, that's not dead on accurate, and we know that because we can't be, but we can get it as close as humanly possible for us, and that's always our goal. So when we come across things in the book that are, and when I say easily written, I don't mean it's easy to write. I just mean that Diana can write Ticonderoga, or they go to this fort, or they go to this city, or they go to this town. And that's the easy part, is that they're created in the book, meaning she creates the settings. Well, we have to build all those. And there's, as we go along in this particular, this section of the story, it becomes more difficult. Early days when we were set in Scotland and there was a castle and you know, Scotland was for Scotland, in a weird way, it's much easier because we could go outside, you know, a few miles away and find Scottish countryside and film there. Or you could throw a rock and hit a castle in Scotland. But you can't throw a rock and find a, you know, clapboard town. So those are the difficulties that we and challenges that we come across as we keep going in this story. And then this season, obviously, there's multiple. It's not just North Carolina anymore. You know, this group right now is traveling north to Ticonderoga. So there's a journey that we have to create, and it has to feel like it's real. This, fortunately, I've been to upstate New York. I've been to North Carolina. I've been to actually everywhere in between there. And it kind of feels like it. Now, what we have going for us is that millions of years ago, the UK and the Appalachian was all connected, and it broke off and it separated by the Atlantic. So this is all kind of the same. So that's why I think we're finding it so natural looking. This was a big to do. We went round and round about the stew, and originally we had to refilm this. Not the performances, just the inserts of the stew. So that original shot of the stew, nobody's that wasn't filmed, so we had to film it anyway. But we had to show it. We had to show what they were eating because of all the reactions. And we didn't you couldn't tell the first time around. You couldn't see what it was. It just kind of looked like stew. So you wondered why anybody would freak out by it. So we decided to refilm it and to really show, a rat and make sure that you could see it. And even in the filming of, nothing was harmed, by the way, but it did gross a lot of people out because it was, well, gross. So, but here's an example of in early days of Scotland, we would go, we'd find a stone, structure, turn it into, whatever we needed for, if it was stables, if it was a kirkyard or whatever we needed, it was out there in Scotland. But this isn't. This style wasn't built in Scotland. So our art department has to first go find an area and that we can build on, and then they create these structures. And I'm always in awe of it. Now, Lallybroch, of course, one of our timeless sets. And oddly enough, it's become more difficult to shoot at Midhope. This is Midhope Castle that we film, not the interiors. The interiors are done on set. But because it's become so popular because of all the fans coming to see it, there's tours, and certainly when spring comes around, all the way through summer, there's tours going through there all the time. So finding the time to film becomes much more difficult. These new challenges are a product of our own success. More and more people want to come and actually walk on to Lallybroch is one of those sets that impresses, I think, in person as well as on screen. So what you see is kind of what you get. There's other sets. I think where you can go to Dune Castle, you look at Dune from the front and you go, oh, okay, it looks a little smaller than I thought. And then you go out to the field and you see Dune Castle from the field, and you go, oh, that's impressive, because you're much lower down. And where that would have been, for those of you who've been around since season one, where Jamie and Claire had their picnic at the stables, looking back up at the castle, that's much lower. So the castle sits, it's very prominent up, and it just looks much bigger. I love this. This is an actual working dam. Those are real turbines. Everything's real in this. And it just, they were so gracious to let us film there. And you can see the production value is off the charts, not only with the interior and showing, but with the exterior. I mean, look at this. That's real, as real as it gets. That's Scotland. One of our big briefs all the time, certainly when we go to Scotland, is let Scotland shine. It's rooted in our story. Obviously Jamie's Scottish, and we want that to kind of saturate our story in a way. We don't want to be too far from Scotland at any point. So here we are back in Scotland. I was talking, I go silent sometimes because I'm watching the scene. So if that's, and I'm sure some of you are too. So we knew we wanted to do this particular part of the story. Obviously, Roger and Bree go back. We have to tell that story. It's in, you know, it's in the books, big part of the books. So I think one of the big things that happen in the books over and over and over again is the separation of loved ones. And it happens throughout all the books. And this is just part of that. So right now we have Jamie and Claire together, but they're separated from their loved ones. And as we always talk about in these podcasts, all story, even if story, you know, diverts from Jamie and Claire, it has to affect them some way. And the stories go off on what we would call a story tangent. I call them tributaries. So they go away from the main river of the story, but they always come back. And I'm not telling you how it's coming back, but it may or may not come back. But those of you who read the books are way ahead of me. You know, in the books, obviously there's tunnels and we've always had challenges. The one thing that Scotland doesn't have a lot of is caves. And not in the sense that we would think of as a serviceable cave. And when I say serviceable, you know, certainly, you know, I've walked through a lot of caves in Scotland, you know, scouting. And getting to them is a challenge for one, and they're usually not very big. So then you can't service this. So how do you create this just, you know, set where you could get a film crew in and the actors, and they're comfortable and they're safe. And that doesn't happen. But this particular place had these tunnels because it's the dam. So To say we hit the jackpot here is an understatement, because this would have all had to been built. We would have had to craft all these tunnels, and no way we could have done it, not with the time allotted, and certainly would have put in, you know, most of the art department budget just building this section right there, and to have it available was miraculous. But yeah, there's quite a few throughout the books. There's quite a few caves, and we did build a few, because we knew we would need them. There was a cave when Jamie lived in a cave, we knew that was a big part of the story. So we would have to do that. And then multiple other caves. So this is one of those things that's described, and you can, in the books, you talk about it over and over again. You go, what is that going to look like? And we had to come to what's the best visual for what, you know, she just walked through. And it was almost like a light waterfall. That's the way like a rippling effect of what a view, right? I mean, gorgeous. Sorry, just looking at the view. Now, obviously, this fort doesn't look like this on a daily basis. You know, we have our art department come in and they build they decorate, you know, set deck, and they make it look like a working fort. And then you add all the costumes and background characters, and it just really jumps off the screen. Here's a moment where in the original script, this scene didn't exist. And when we watched the episode, we realized, oh, we need to get Ian to the Mohawk village. And in the original cut, he just showed up. And with the information, he, you know, that he's finding out here. and he had already had that information in the scene, and it just felt like there was something missing. So we created this scene to give him the angst. Actually, we also needed there to be a dilemma for him. Do I go or do I not go because of, you know, who I might see there? So we wrote that scene and we inserted it into the cut after we saw the original show put together. So those are, I think when we talk about writing, you know, the writing of the show is, it kind of goes on and on and on. You know, we never stop just because the script's done. It would be like if you have a blueprint, the blueprint for a building is the blueprint, and then you build it. And as you're building, a lot of times things don't go as planned. And you're digging somewhere, you're doing something. And I was just talking to someone, they're doing a construction project, and they had planned to dig out this one area and build a driveway or drive road, a road. And they found massive boulders and they couldn't move them. So they had to divert, they had to change, they had to adjust where the road was going to go. And I thought that's how our show works. That's how a lot of shows work, to have movies. And I know there's multiple projects where you read that's not the original ending of the movie. They went back and reshot a new ending because it didn't, the first ending didn't work. And a lot of times you need to see it. You know, there are certain scenes on the page and you go, wow, that's just, you know, that's going to work. You know, everybody's going to bring their A game to it, and you just see and you know it's going to work. And then there's other scenes that you have that feeling about, and then you watch it and it somehow doesn't work, or you go, oh, the audience is going to need more information, or the audience is going to need less. And that happens quite a bit too, is there are moments where scenes go on too long or they start too soon. One of the things in film and television is start late, end early in a scene. And that means, you know, get into the scene as late as possible and end it as early, as soon as you can, keeping the story flowing. And that's a challenge always. And there's many, many moments where we give information, exposition in the show, so the audience knows what's going on. And when we say knows what's going on, it has to suit everybody, meaning the people who have read the books can fill in the gaps, but the people who haven't read the books need to know the information to move the story forward. And we can't, you know, there's a lot of viewers, so in both groups, so we have to, you know, make sure that information gets out. But the goal is always to start as late as possible and end as soon as possible, and make that gives you the most impactful scene. And over time, you know, both, you know, all the actors, Katrina, Sam, they've learned that sometimes, oh, well, all these words can be conveyed in these strong looks or an inflection of one or two words rather than a whole speech. This action sequence was very difficult when we cut it together. It's very straightforward. There was a lot more action in here, and we cut it down again to the necessity, what we needed to show the characters, to show the, you know, how William reacts to this, how the hunters react to this. And there was much more to the sequence, and we just cut it down to it's bare bone. That was very controversial, as what to do with, would he do that? And I think in the heat of the moment, we decided he would, because he was just trying to kill all of them. So I think when you talk about his character, I think it's whole. I don't think he did anything wrong there. That's me personally. I mean, you can think whatever, obviously, you'll think whatever you want. But in that moment, it was a reaction. There was a lot of emotion, and he was scared. You got to remember, William has practiced, you know, shooting and riding and fencing, but he'd never been in that situation before. So a lot of emotions going on. I think that was what we decided, is that he just would react, and it was a reaction. And part of it is, you want that little bit of let me jump backwards here a little bit. One of the little things throughout this season that I had talked to the directors and the writers and Charles about is, I wanted to see a little bit of his Scottishness, his Highland, that Highland blood coming out. And I didn't want it to jump out. I didn't want it to just, you know, you go instantly go, oh yeah, I get it. You want it to kind of slowly, slowly, slowly creep out because of all the pressures he's facing. So when we saw the prostitute burned and he showed compassion and caring when all his other comrades didn't, and his gentlemen officers were, you know, basically don't get involved, but he did, and he can't help himself. And I think that's the little bit, that's that Jamie Frazier blood in him. And what I wanted, and over the course of the season, is more and more and more of that to come out. So what we saw there, you know, what I saw there was a little bit of that coming out, is Jamie does what he has to do to protect his family and the people he loves. And that's what William did. And that's why it made sense to me. And, you know, as we go in deeper into the season, one of the things that I think you can look forward to is more of that. Because to me, it's part of the journey. It's part of who William is. And his journey, and we wanted to see that. We want to see that coming out over and over again. Obviously, this is the moment where we reveal the title and where it came from. We were in the writer's room, and we were talking about this particular moment in history, and it kind of fit what was going on right here. And I like that. That Jamie, you know, he'll listen to something, but he always has, you know, something in the back of his head, a plan, or he can take a nugget. Somebody says something and he acts on it. He can create from that. So I'm not drinking whiskey again. I know that tradition is that we, you know, have a little wee dram while we do the podcast. When I say we, it's just me. And as I've talked about this, it feels a little odd for me to be drinking on whiskey alone, certainly at 9 o'clock in the morning when I'm doing this podcast. So moratorium on the boozing during the podcast until I have a guest. And when I get my next guest, I'll booze it back up again. Sorry, lost my train was derailed there for a moment. I always get mesmerized by Denzel's hat. It just, I don't know what it is about that hat. It looks like an upside down prospector's, pan. The you're mining for gold or you're prospecting for gold. I don't know. It just kind of looks like that, or a really fancy bowl at a fancy restaurant. Where you get like one ravioli with some sauce and maybe a sprig of parsley in this massive perfect bowl. That's that hat. Sorry. The other thing is, but try to be authentic, of course. So her bonnet is very authentic. And I know the director, Tracy, was like, I can't see her face. So it was because from the other side, this side, we should be able to see her face. And obviously this thing came out. And then there's the lighting of it all. You have to get light in there. I will say the thing you learn most about filmmaking is there's always something. You can plan and plan and plan, and then on the day you get there and everybody's excited and everybody's got their costumes on and hair and makeup and everything, and then something happens and it starts to rain, or you it calls for a sunny day and it's not sunny. It calls for a rainy moment, it's sunny. When we filmed in the Mohawk Village, originally when we first built it, I remember I was standing on the banks, looking back at the entire village, going, "This is amazing." And we were just getting ready to film, and some paddle boarders came by on the little lock that we were filming on, and they were looking at us like we were crazy, and we were looking at them like, "What are you?" Like they were crazy. They had stumbled what it looked to them probably like they went through some sort of time portal and stumbled back in time because they came around the bend and they were looking at a 18th century Mohawk village in Scotland, no less. So that was actually kind of funny. But we had to wait for them to paddle all the way down out of view because we were doing the main master shot, which means we were covering everything, and you could see up and down the lock quite a ways. So those are like that's one of the millions of random things that have happened to us along the way. I think one of the most asked questions over the decade that we've been doing this is what's something funny that happens on set? And it's weird because, we laugh about a lot of things. Obviously we enjoy each other's company. We've been filming, it's a family. So there's a lot of really good times. We bicker, we can argue about different things. Oh, I see it this way or I see it that way. But, we're a big family and we laugh about a ton of things. So when I know that I get asked that, the cast gets asked that quite a bit too on their panels. And we always kind of look a little dumbfounded, like, because there's so many to code, but they might not be funny. It's one of that old saying is, oh, you kind of had to be there. So if we relayed something and the audience gives a would give a, maybe a cursory chuckle because they're being nice, but it's probably not as funny to relay it. And I know that's kind of a non-answer to that question, but it is. Think about your own lives and all the things that make you laugh, and then you relay them to somebody and it doesn't make them laugh because they weren't in the moment. And that's kind of those what's the funniest thing that happened on set moments. But we've had things happen that aren't necessarily funny, but that have hampered. I remember once getting a call from One of our directors, Denise Denovi, who filmed for us a few seasons back, and we love her very dearly. She called me and said, well, we had to stop because it's raining. And I said, well, just keep filming. And then she called me later and she goes, well, it's hailing. And I said, well, just keep filming. And then she said, well, I think it's snowing now. And then the last call was, well, the sun came out and now it's a glorious day. And that was one day. And we laughed about it and we checked the continuity. And amazingly, the continuity worked out okay because throughout the day, the scenes had changed. So she did a scene in the morning and then two more scenes during the day. And it worked out that the continuity didn't get wrecked. But so that to me and her, that was funny because she got all four seasons in one day, as we say here. But to relay that, I'm sure there's not a lot of you laughing, slapping your knees right now of that story. And obviously, I didn't tell it very well. They duke it. Keep out. Obviously, he doesn't read well. Or obey the sign. This area, I don't know how many times we tread this driveway, back in the early seasons. To me, that view never gets old. I love it. So iconic now. I told you about the troubles that we go through just to film there now because of all the tourists that go there. But look, I love it. If that wasn't the case, we wouldn't be on the air, we wouldn't be filming. We wouldn't be watching the seventh season. We wouldn't be already in the writer's room for season eight, which is really exciting. Hopefully everybody's as excited as we are. I know that when we heard the news, we were over the moon because we wanted to be able to give Outlander its just due. Don't know if we'll ever, well, I know we'll never catch Diana because she's working on the 10th book right now. So, and that won't be out for probably quite a little while. That's a nice moment. It's a really nice moment. Look, I always say this in every podcast, these little moments that I think make our show special. And when I say that, I don't mean that every other show in the world isn't special. I just mean, I think that's why people come to the show and they like these moments and to show our characters somewhat being who they are. And when the show gets too plotty, in the sense the plot's the framing that holds up the story. And when that's all you get, that's all you get. It's just, oh, look, there's no decorations, there's no walls, there's no furniture. And that to me are these little moments, the moments that make the show. And I know I talk about that a lot, but I like to point them out in how important they are, that we keep those and the lessons learned. When season we had season one and Claire and Jamie are in every, Claire certainly the first half of that season was in every scene. And then once Jamie and Claire become a couple, we were able to stay with to go with one of them, follow them in their in whatever story they were was happening to them, and then bring them back together. And but we have so many more characters now. and so many more storylines that, you know, following the books, we go off and tell these other moments. And with Hope, they help show who these characters are and help tell the story of Jamie and Claire, even though Jamie and Claire aren't actually in the moment. You know, obviously that's Roger and talking to his son, and you know, he and Jamie are having this kind of sweet moment, but it all will come back. That's the key, is it has to come back to the main story, and the main story is always going to be Jamie and Claire. So that that's kind of one of those things in the book, in all the books, that when we're breaking the stories, you go, okay, how much is too much away from the main river? And does the audience need to know these things about these characters? Because if and I was thinking about this, we had this big debate. Sorry, I went off. I digress. Is that in season one, if you go back and watch it, there's this really cool moment in at four, I think it's 104, where one of Dougal's close friends, Geordi, gets gored by the wild boar. And Claire's there, and they come together. And one of the big debates was, will the audience care? Will the audience care that this random guy named Geordi dies? And Geordi meant so much to Dougal, and Claire saw that, and that Claire and Dougal had this amazing moment over this dying guy. And it was, you know what, that will bring the scene to life. That will make Geordi important, how they portrayed that. And we always debate that. Will the audience care about the person who's dying? And it realized that as long as Claire and Dougal cares so much, that the audience will go with it. And it did work. So that's what we talk about a lot with these new characters, is as long as Jamie and Claire care a lot about them, then we need to show what's happening to them. And Jamie and Claire, you can see how much they care and what they mean to the character. So the loss of that character would devastate Jamie and Claire. Hence, that's the battle of what goes in and what goes out, you know, what we have to take out. All these moments here, sorry, I'm going to get back to the episode. That was my tangent. I was going at least one tangent. That Sugarloaf mountain isn't really there. The gunfire, all that was visual effects, and just a great, great job. Some of these are stock shots of the actual area where Ticonderoga is, and we feed those in to be as authentic as possible. So, sorry, I was noticing something. Over and over and over again, when you watch these episodes, you know, I'll notice little things that I didn't notice the first 50 times I've watched it. My eye kind of goes all over. But it's normally to go, oh, cool, that's a little thing I didn't notice before. The background, just the, you know, the things hanging in the background, and how natural they look and how real it looks. I also like to make sure that the background or artists or not repeating, like you don't see the same person walking by over and over again. That kind of bugs me. So again, great visual effects. I go on and on about that. I think these are the moments where you go, I'm sure someone out there is going, why is this moment in the show? And the reward or the payoff or however you want to phrase it comes later. But we need to set certain things up. And some of these things are, you might go, wow, that's just a random moment in a random episode. But there's nothing random. This is all planned. And we plan out each one of these moments, you know, just as they are in the book. But when we can't do something or we can't use something or it doesn't work, then we have to figure out the moments. We have such a great guide, but that's normally my answer because I'm answering random questions that I've had for the last 10 years in some of these podcasts is, you know, how and why we pick scenes and why are some scenes in the show when they feel, you know, feels like, oh, well, you could, there's so much more in the books. Why are you doing this story when you could be doing that story? That gets asked probably daily. And normally when I actually do venture out to do panels or whatever, the events, that that's a question that it's asked repeatedly. Why I normally get, why didn't you do my favorite scene? And of course, I don't know what everybody's favorite scenes are. And that's just hard. That's just kind of hard to do. I wish I could mind read. But that's never going to happen in a weird way. I mean, that's the most honest answer. We can't do every single favorite scene because there's a million of them throughout all these books. And my favorite scenes aren't necessarily Tony's or Meryl's you know, any of the other writer producers who we you know, break these things down and you know, that once they go to the directors and then the actors, and I'm sure they have favorite moments too. And sometimes they don't make it into the show because we have to tell the story. And as much as some of these scenes are magical or in the book, when you read them, they are either unproducible. We can't shoot them for time or they don't actually fit the television show. They fit the books. And that's the one thing I'll say until my dying day, never changed a single word in the books. Every time I go to the bookshelf and I pull my book out and I read it, all of Diana's words are exactly the same. Television show doesn't change that at all. And I think that's a bonus. You know, these are my opinions and only my opinions. But in a cool way, you get to have these books that give you all those feelings and you can pull them out off your shelf and read them anytime you want. Or you have the show and it can give you a different feeling, a different way of experience, the same story in a different way. And I know that I was just talking to Tony a couple of days ago and she had reread something and she's like, oh my God, I reread this section. It's so good. Blah, 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 blah. You know, and it gave her all the emotions that she had when she first read it. And she'd seen the scene because we were doing some posts and she had seen the scene played out, you know, on the show. And it was great. It was a good scene. But it gave her a different feeling. It didn't give her the same feeling. And I think that's where you get the best of both worlds. Again, that was just my opinion. How many scratches to put on the lens? How close should they be? How powerful? Is that a 10 times scope? Is it a 12 times scope? We go through all these little things in post when we're looking at all this stuff. And, hopefully what's right, what's not right. I like that look right there to Jamie is don't speak. Don't speak and give me away. Like the Jamie's way ahead of the game. Way ahead of the game. So this again, talking about a moment. So when we originally filmed this, so th there was a scene that comes up right after this. This scene didn't exist. And what was lacking was the moment that Brianna makes the decision. So she got, they played this prank on her. And she knows it's only going to get worse. It's going to get worse, but she has to do something about it. So we had originally it was written where she walks into a pub and there's two sides to the pub. There's the male side and the female side is there that happens a lot in the UK. And they didn't have that when they filmed it. So when I saw it, I was like, oh, wait. We didn't have the moment where Brianna makes the decision. She needs to go. I'm not going to put up with this. And that was what we refilmed. Well, we didn't refilm it. We just filmed it. And that was that moment with Roger. So now when she comes in, it is, she's already made the decision. I'm going to go and tell these guys how it's going to be, that I'm not going to put up with their crap. And to watch them either give her respect or not. But we needed the Brianna moment, and it wasn't originally written or filmed. So after the cut came in, it was like we absolutely need that moment where she decides and we see her doing, because then it would just been her randomly walking in the bar and, or the pub and be like, how did she get there? Why did she get there? Why did she go there? And I think that it to me makes much more sense like this. She puts these guys in their place and then we hear him say the gov and that gives the respect so deserved. Obviously opinions will vary of course, and but I it every episode has kind of whose story is it? And episode five, it's actually Brianna's story. This is her episode. And then Jamie and Claire are in it, and Williams and a lot of people are, and even Roger, but it's really Brianna's driving the story. It's her arc, this episode. We looked for that this season to go, okay, whose story is it? And it's, nine times out of 10 is going to be Jamie or Claire's, or Jamie and Claire. So, but that we do have other characters that we have to, tell their story. And this one just happens to be Breeze. So we break it down like this: A story, B story, C story. Relatively simple. The A story is literally the main driving force of the episode. Then there's a B, and the C is usually a runner. You know, and it's called a runner because it's, you know, you might get two or three little beats of it, and it doesn't really necessarily have to tell a whole story. It's there. And that would be the C story of this would be the Ian story. You know, there were three beats and doesn't really tell a whole story, but it kind of moves his character a little bit forward. And then the Jamie and Claire is the B story in this one. And of course, as we go forward, you know, that'll almost always Jamie and or Claire is the A story going into the episode. But every now and then, of course, you're going to have a story where it just flips. So this is Brianna's for the season, and that's why when the story ended, so that's where the story ended originally, is that Ticonderoga, everybody was going away, and when I watched it, I was like, well, Bree's story didn't have really an ending other than she's in the pub with those guys. And I go, that wasn't a great ending for that character. So now she goes in and she finds the Karen. And the bookend is she's proud of herself because of she knows her dad would be proud of her. And she had that strength that he gave her and that her mom gave her, that she was able to walk through that threshold and come here. And then have a conversation with her dad because we want to keep the spirit of them being together without being together. It's kind of like what we did in season three, where in season three, Jamie and Claire weren't together for the first, you know, six episodes. And but we wanted to keep the feeling that they were together. They were always thinking of each other. Claire looks out the window and she sees a bird. She thinks of Jamie, and Jamie's always thinking of Claire. Well, we wanted to kind of keep that going here too. And to me, this was the most powerful, the strongest ending for this particular episode. And we wanted to have her keep talking as that we go to black, telling, you know, and maybe those words are finding Jamie and Claire somewhere in the ether. So anyway, that's 7:05 Singapore. Hopefully everybody enjoyed it. And we got another great episode coming up. To me, another a great season coming up, and it's like a roller coaster. Some episodes are going to have you high as a kite, and some are going to we're going to bring you down, and you're going to be as low as you possibly can. When I say low, I mean emotionally wrecked, as we try to do. And you know, there's battles on the horizon, both in battles like war, guns, cannons, but also emotional battles. And I will say some of the most poignant emotional battles are coming up in the back half that I cannot wait for you guys to see. Anyway, that's me, Matt Roberts, your host here on the Outlander official Outlander podcast. Have a good night or a good morning wherever you are. See you next time.